Hey, everybody. Welcome again to F This Movie, the official podcast of FThisMovie.net, movie love for movie lovers. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I'm very excited this week to talk about From Dusk Till Dawn, celebrating its 20th anniversary this month.
Boom.
By Adam Riske.
Hey, Patrick. What's going on, brother?
I think I said I'm excited to talk, pause, by Adam Riske. I'm excited to talk with Adam Riske.
You can talk by me.
Lowly. Dog, bow your head.
hold on. There's no escape in here. No, that's a different
Wrong movie.
That's a different movie.
That's, I think, the one that I quote from her. Yeah. There's no escape in here.
Yeah. You stupid bitch. That's the one I quote. In this one, I don't know what I quote from her. Maybe she's just like, I don't want to say this in front of Scott because he gets upset. That's the one I'll quote from her.
I just say, like, Richie, would you eat my pussy? We're going to be talking From Dusk Till Dawn. Adam Riske, you're just back from Austin, Texas.
I am, yeah. I took a little mini vacation.
I'm excited to hear about your trip. We're going to talk about it in 1 second. But first, we have to talk about this week's big announcement. By the time this podcast comes out, we will have announced the lineup and all of the pertinent information for F This Movie Fest 5.
Yes.
Our annual all Twitter film festival taking place Saturday, February 13th at noon Central Standard Time. This year we are celebrating the films of 1984, and we're going to watch The Last Starfighter,
mm-hmm.
Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom,
mm-hmm.
Night of the Comet,
mm-hmm.
Streets of Fire,
mm-hmm.
and Ghostbusters.
That is a good lineup.
You know how it's a good lineup? Two of the movies star Catherine Mary Stewart. Shit's working.
Okay, she was in Night of the Comet, and then what else is she?
Last Starfighter, baby.
Oh, that's right. You know
Jean
what?
Shorts?
I always think of Flight of the Navigator when I hear Last Starfighter for a second. But Last Starfighter is Dan O'Hurley and
correct.
Lance Guest and Catherine Mary Stewart.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
Gotcha.
So we're super excited about that. We watch movies all day and talk about them on Twitter. We're not making fun of them. This isn't a thing where we're like, let's joke about movies on Twitter. We genuinely love these movies, and that's why we watch them. For more information on that, go to fthismovie.net and click on the tab that says F This Movie Fest. But this is our fifth one. I'm very excited.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun.
It's going to be our biggest ever.
I know. And by the way, if you have the good fortune of attending my funeral in a few decades, then you will be listening to a lot of songs from the Streets of Fire soundtrack.
Absolutely.
Because I want people to have fun. I want people
like
to,
I Can Dream About You?
That they
or
can,
like Nowhere Fast?
Well, Nowhere Fast, I think, is more apropos because like you're dead, so you are kind of going nowhere fast. But I didn't know what it was in reference to, but I saw that you put up a picture of Diane Lane from Streets of Fire
on
your Facebook page.
Yes, I did.
And I was like, oh no, she died. At first, I'm like, ugh.
No.
We can't have lost her.
No.
And then when I realized that she wasn't, then I was just like, ooh, it's just Streets of Fire. I was excited again. So I posted that on my way into heaven, I want to hear the song. Tonight is what it means to be young. Because like I imagine that it'll be like 2001 where he goes through the Stargate. I imagine that's what it's going to be like when I go to heaven.
When I die, it's going to be like that movie Stargate. And I'm just going to meet Jay Davidson as an Egyptian god. Yeah, what was up with people commenting on that picture? Like, one of my favorite bad movies. Like, no, this is not a bad movie. By the way, how did this get made this week? Their episode is on Streets of Fire, which, one, I'm like, well, that's interesting. It's just in the zeitgeist because we're about to announce that it's part of our festival. Mm-hmm. But three of the four hosts just shit on the movie for the whole podcast. Jason Mantzoukas is the only one who's like, this movie is awesome. And he's right.
That's pathetic.
It's not a bad movie.
It's a good movie.
Yes, it is.
It's a really good movie.
I love it.
Is that movie on Blu-ray?
It is in the UK.
Okay.
So you will be watching it on Blu-ray on February 13th here.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Because when I was in Austin, when I was
name
there,
dropper,
when I was there, I went to Waterloo Records. Did you go there when you were in Austin?
I sure as shit did.
And they had a German version of Streets of Fire on Blu-ray, but it wasn't like a region
region one, free.
It wasn't region free, so yeah. I didn't buy it. But I was all excited for a second because I'm like, I don't have this at all, and I just want it on Blu-ray.
The UK one is also not region free, but I have a region free player. There's like a feature length documentary on there about the making of the movie that I'm super excited to check out.
Yeah.
I believe it is on iTunes in HD.
Okay.
Which I've been meaning to text you also because Tales from the Hood is now on there in HD as well. And that DVD is out of print.
Yes.
And goes for way too much money. It's not out on Blu-ray. So to me, I thought of you immediately because I know what a fan you are.
I love that movie.
You can finally own it in HD.
Mm-hmm. And I'm disappointed because our friend Heather Wixon apparently has some dirt on Tales from the Hood.
What?
And has hinted to me about like what a troubled production it was, and like so-and-so didn't really like do this or didn't do that, but she never like really told me the full story. And she's kind of just stretching it out over flashback weekends because that's the only time that I get to see Heather. So next year, Heather, I want to know the full Monty on Tales from the Hood.
I'll try to get it out of her. Did you see the Scream reunion at this year's flashback?
I'm totally excited.
You're gonna meet Lillard.
I'm
your
not,
boy.
I usually don't get autographs anymore, but like I'm gonna make an exception to get a Scream poster. And also, they just announced Rachel True from The Craft.
What? So you could get your Craft poster signed by Rachel True and Neve Campbell.
And Skeet Ulrich.
Skeet is in both as well.
Yeah.
What are the odds on Tunney making an appearance?
Good.
You think?
I'd say good. But I mean, like, then you got to get your Vertical Limit poster signed. I mean, then it's just like your weekend shot. You're going to be spending a ton of money.
That is outstanding.
There you go.
Okay, so
yeah.
Let's talk about Austin. Let's talk about, have you seen anything good lately?
All right, well, I really...
money. It's going to be hard to top on this podcast.
I really enjoyed your column last week, The Heavy Action, about Beverly Hills Cop 2, because I was always wondering if I was wrong for not liking that movie. But I totally went Axel Foley in Cop 2.
You banana tailpiped?
No.
Everywhere in Austin?
In Cop 2, I went that route in Austin because, like, I get there and I was supposed to get, like, a compact car. And I was just like, and they're like, do you want something nice? Do you want, like, a Mustang? And I'm like, fuck yeah, I want a Mustang. So I drove around in a Mustang. So I'm, like, going to, like, fucking, like, cafes.
Nice.
And just pulling up at 7:30 in the morning, like, rrr. I'm, like, pulling in.
Not just riding on the back of some dude's bike.
Nope.
The way everyone else travels in Austin.
Exactly, exactly. So I was doing that. And then on my way home, I booked the whole trip through Priceline, so like I didn't see like which seats I was getting when I was booking the flight. So on my flight home, it says middle seat, and I'm like, oh god, no, thank you. And then it says for $90 extra, you could sit first class, and I'm just like, I have never sat first class on a plane before, so I am sitting Axel Foley style in Cop 2 on my way back. So then I get on the plane. And by the way, Andy McDowell can't even fly first class anymore, and I'm flying first class.
I heard about that dust up.
I know. I'm like an X-Men because I'm going Origins. Just kidding. I'm going first class, Days of Futures, past. Now it's like slam poetry.
It was turning into a little bit of deaf poetry.
Yeah. So I'm sitting there, and I am just soaking in first class. It's nice. It's very nice. This gentleman sitting next to me, he's on a connecting flight from Chicago, from Austin to Chicago to Rochester, Minnesota, I guess.
Okay.
And he's going to a client meeting. And he's talking to me about this client meeting. And it's fucking Sunday afternoon. And I'm just like, I don't mean to be rude. And you know when somebody says, I don't mean to be rude, that they're going to say some of the rudest shit to you. So I said, sir, I don't mean to be rude, but I've never sat first class before, and I don't want to spoil it by talking. And he looked at me like I was insane. But he did not say another word
that
to me the rest
incredible.
Of the plane.
Incredible.
I just, like, I needed to put a stop to it.
Yeah.
I just did not want to talk to him at all about it. I wanted to sit there and read my Austin Chronicle and read my Entertainment Weekly TV preview. So I knew, like, that I wanted to watch The People versus O.J. Simpson. And then I'm not black, I'm O.J. I want to see that. That sounds awesome.
But it's Ryan Murphy. It's going to be so horrible.
It probably will.
I can't wait. Well, it's got your boy Travolta.
It does. It's got Johnny T in it. And then I want to watch the Stephen King show with James Franco on Hulu. Is that not a good book?
No, the book is great.
Okay.
I just have zero faith in the show.
Okay. I want to watch Vinyl.
Yeah.
I want to watch, there was one other one. I can't remember. Anyways. Whatevs. So, before I go to Austin, I have this weird tradition of wanting to watch Love and Air Sex.
Okay.
You've seen it, right?
I have.
Okay, so I bought it on Amazon. I own it digitally. It's on Amazon Prime. You can watch it for free if you want to.
Decided to purchase it?
I purchased it, yeah.
It's available for free, and you still bought it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I need it.
Everything's making sense.
I need it, yeah.
So, why not wait till it's no longer free and then buy it?
I don't give a shit, man. I got money.
Oh, wait, that's right. You're flying first class and driving Mustangs.
I got money to burn.
Dropping $6 on Love & Air Sex.
I've got a ton of money. So I'm like Brewster's Millions up in this piece. So I'm watching Love & Air Sex, and I don't know why, but I just really love that movie. It's like total Austin bait. It's like an only movie. It's only a movie that if you love Austin, you would love the movie.
I loved Austin when I went.
Not so much.
Loved Sarah Paxton.
Yeah.
And yet. Although she has a bunch of tattoos in that movie, right?
Yeah, she does.
Kind of works for me.
Yeah, exactly. She's adorable in the movie. My girl Addison Timlin's in it.
I forgot about A-Tims.
She's looking amazing in that movie.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know. I mean, like, there's certain scenes in the movie where it's like two guys who are trying to get over their exes. They're like, we need to delete their phone numbers from our phones. And the way I'm describing it makes it sound stupid, but like,
well, cause you're leaving out all the parts about the air sex competitions.
Oh yeah.
Which are a thing.
Yeah. I'm not a big fan of the air sex sequences.
Yeah. That's half the title.
Yeah.
Like, the love is only half of the movie.
I like the love stuff a lot.
Yeah, the rest of it is air sex.
The love stuff makes up for all the air sex stuff. So anyways, it's good enough to buy on Amazon Prime.
or watch for free.
Or blind buy it. Or buy it.
Hey, when you're spending tonny money getting your Scream poster signed, can you just flick off bills and go skeet, 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 skeet?
I sure will.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, I definitely will. I'll be like, I'm feeling all right. All rich.
I like it.
Got money to burn, my friend. Lillard. Nice. And I'm like, smell this cash, Lillard. You want some of it? You want this 20, Lillard? You want this 20?
It'll be all zoinks.
I got Nevs to feed. Yeah, I saw Love and Air Sex before I left for Austin on my annual sojourn. I need to just get this off my chest here. So you guys are wonderful. You're an amazing audience and like friends. I love the F This Movie community, but stop bothering me about Lights, Camera, Jackson. Like, the joke's done. Like, that was last year's joke. Yeah. And I'm just fucking done with it. I described it to Patrick where it's just like, it was the cool indie band and you guys made it mainstream and you fucking ruined it for me.
You guys Green Day'd Lights, Camera, Jackson.
Yeah, you did.
LCJ.
So, yeah, the fucking, you know, Lights, Camera varietal of Jackson is done for me. So, yeah, I mean, like, let's come up with some new shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
2016. Some 2016 shit.
Some 2016 shit. Yeah. So, I went to... One of the Alamo Draft Houses, they had the Kill Bill double feature, but it was the Kill Bill feast, and at that was a 6-course meal of food, and I brought the menu with me.
Nice.
So I can read off what they had.
All right.
So it was pretty awesome, and they had drink pairings with everyone.
Of course.
So you had, during Kill Bill 1, you had avocado nigiri sushi.
I'm out.
No. Okay.
Bring me some french fries.
With lemon zest and black salt, but it was paired with the Hanzo margarita, and that was pretty awesome.
Okay.
That was good. Then the second course was Life and Death, which is crushed goldfish crusted chicken.
All right.
And a baby spinach and herb salad. And it was paired with a Yolumba's Cristobal's Eden Valley Riesling.
You're just saying words.
It was pretty good.
All right.
Then was Elle's Eyeball, which was a cherry tomato, olive relish, and tomato water. It was fucking disgusting.
I'm six kinds of out on that.
Paired with cranberry gimlet shot, which didn't do anything for me. Here was the best one. Bud's Trailer Trash Pile, house-made tater tots, aged cheddar, bacon, green onion, sour cream, paired with a can of Budweiser.
Done.
Yeah, that was pretty nice.
Yeah.
That was before that was when Kill Bill 2 started.
Okay.
Then it was beef yakitori, ginger rice cake, and grilled bok choy paired with Mamakawa Diamond Jumanji Ginjo. I don't know.
That sounds very Asian, and I feel like that would go better in part one, no?
It went with the Pai Mei sequence. So okay. It would okay. go better with part one, okay. I would think.
Because L's Eyeball technically belongs in part two.
Yeah. So but I don't know. Whatever. They could have made a flip.
They don't know what they're doing over there.
They obviously don't know what they're doing because the last one was called the Hidden Gun, and it was Kaboom Marshmallow Treat, Kefir Cream Soda, and Chocolate Snake paired with El Tesoro Anejo. But the problem with that is Kaboom is from the cereal from the beginning of part one.
Yeah.
So I don't know. But here's the thing.
Way to go, guys.
Here's the thing.
Yeah.
The food was delicious. Yeah. I was drunk halfway through the
I would
the,
imagine
through
so.
The first movie with all the drinks pairing and everything. And it was tough to focus on Kill Bill because you were just constantly getting food and drinks and everything like that. But there's one observation I had that I haven't had in probably like 10 years of seeing Kill Bill. But I remember it not being something new to me.
Okay.
The part that always kind of struck me was I saw Kill Bill Volume 2 like right after I got over a breakup, and it was like a bad breakup. And then there's the part where Bud is nailing the bride into the casket, and he says, this is for breaking my brother's heart.
Uh-huh.
And I was thinking, I'm like, I'm going to watch this movie from Bill's perspective, and it's a very interesting, like, spurned lover story from that side. And that's one thing I love about Tarantino movies is that even in his quote-unquote like genre exercises, like for the people who are detractors of Tarantino, they kind of like write him off as far as that goes, he always finds ways to make like emotionally rich characters within, and you can understand their kind of code of ethics,
right?
There's sort of, you know, reasons for doing what they're doing, even if it's despicable things that they're doing.
Absolutely.
And that's one thing that I always liked about it. And I think Kill Bill is probably like my third favorite of his movies outside of Pulp Fiction and then Jackie Brown. But with Kill Bill, it's maybe the one that I emotionally connect to the most.
Interesting.
So I don't know. I think it's just there's so much like at stake. In terms of like her wanting to get her daughter back, her wanting to get revenge, Bill being just so spurned by the bride and like what she did to him and everything like that. I just kind of feel for everybody in that movie.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It was a nice experience, especially seeing them back to back in a theater. I was hoping that they would surprise us and it would be the whole bloody affair.
Wouldn't that be nice?
It would be nice.
You can only see that if you go to the New Beverly.
Yeah. Did you hear how they're doing that now?
No.
So you have to go see every one of his movies at midnight and see Hateful Eight at midnight.
Like a punch card?
And you get a punch card and then you're invited to go see the whole bloody affair.
Wow.
So
interesting and weird.
Yeah. I don't know, but yeah, so that was fun. And like beforehand, they had a pre-show of trailers that were like the Five Fingers of Death, The Bride Wore Black.
That's cool.
What's
Lady Snowblood?
Lady Snowblood. Yeah. So a lot of cool stuff. Yeah, so that's one thing I just love about the Draft House experiences, the whole pre-show aspect.
It's super cool.
They really make it a fun evening out
when
you go to see a movie there.
Here's a question I have, because this information about Kill Bill, The Whole Bloody Affair is new to me. It's weird, like you have to earn it. You know, Tarantino is very particular about how people see his movies and wants people to see the movies in the way that he wants you to see them. So 70mm intermission, blah, blah, blah. Kill Bill was designed to be one movie and was split up for kind of
financial reasons.
Right. It wasn't his call. It was the studio's call. if that's how he wanted it to be seen, why make it so impossible to see that way?
I don't know. And one thing that's really confusing to me is you have to see Kill Bill Volume 1 as a midnight show on its own and Kill Bill Volume 2 on its own as a midnight show in order to get punches for those two movies in order for you to see the whole bloody affair later on.
I don't get it.
I don't either.
That bums me out.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'll talk about it later, but like the less that I know about certain people, the more I like them.
Sure.
Tarantino is one of those people.
Sure.
So if you keep him on message with a lot of things, then he's amazing. He's a great speaker and he's very interesting. But there's a lot of things, and I'm not even talking about his political things, because whatever you believe, that's fine. Whatever. I don't care.
Right.
He's just... I don't know.
He named The Internship as one of his favorite movies of last year.
You
so
need to
you guys
stop
are
that.
Simpatico.
It's the intern.
I'm sorry, The Intern.
The
God
intern.
Damn it.
Stop it.
I thought I had it right that time.
You totally screwed the intern. Me on that goddamn podcast. You're like, yeah,
I corrected
The Internship.
It.
Yeah, yeah. You had to get somebody else to correct you.
But I knew the movie in my head
All
that
right.
I was referencing.
Have you seen The Intern yet?
No, I haven't.
You should watch
I
it.
I will, I promise.
It's very enjoyable.
I will.
Yeah.
I have a soft spot for Nancy Meyers movies, although I did yeah. not like...
It's complicated.
It's complicated.
Yeah. Yeah, which Tarantino thinks is like an airtight script.
I mean, that's that's crazy talk.
Yeah.
Like, he has crazy opinions sometimes. But
a little
like,
bit. A little bit.
I'll take The Holiday over It's Complicated.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
The Holiday is
I'll
like,
take,
what?
I'll take What Women Want over It's Complicated. Did she do Father of the Bride, or did she just like produce it?
Co-wrote it, I think, with Charles Shire, but I don't think she was technically a director. So is Something's Gotta Give still her magnum opus?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I like The Intern better than Something's Gotta Give.
I still haven't seen it, but I like Something's Gotta Give.
Yep. And then I saw The Boy.
Oh, okay.
And it's funny because the doll in that movie's name is Brahms.
Nice.
So there's all these rules to Brahms. So the entire time I was laughing to myself, where I'm just like, it's like you have to kiss Brahms asleep to like to go to sleep.
Yeah.
You need to feed him.
Okay.
You need to. I'm trying to think of what. Like you can. He needs to like have his music played loud.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was like
how
there's
I like
10
it.
Rules. It was like a gremlin of like
right.
And it's just you know I'm like are these the rules for our Brahms?
They are.
So it was
especially
good.
Especially when Maggie, what's her name, is the person
oh,
that
Maggie
has to kiss
from,
me to sleep.
From
Maggie from
The Walking,
Walking
Dead.
Dead. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, she's cute. She's very cute. She's the best thing in the movie. The movie is like watered down Hammer. For like a half hour, and then I was thinking JB would love this, and then I was bored out of my mind for like the second half hour, and I'm like JB probably wouldn't like
no.
this. And then the twist happens, and I won't spoil the twist, but
when
it's
we're
so...
off mic you can tell me the twist.
Okay, yeah, but
I'm never gonna see it.
It's so stupid and just like it makes no sense with what preceded it.
Yeah,
like there's no way that logistically it would work in whatever the with what the reveal was that I mean I just threw you just like throw up your hands at that point and you're just like this movie is completely you know not even interested in being like great trash it's
right.
just a pathetic excuse of January horror filmmaking
will
so,
we ever get good studio horror
yeah we'll get it The Witch looks pretty
yeah.
good So
31 played at Sundance.
Yeah, I heard that was good, too.
Well, from some people.
Well, you know what, though?
Most people hated it.
But most people hated, like, Lords of Salem,
True.
Too. So you can't, like, trust
But even the reviews what... I've read say, like, Devil's Rejects is good. Lords of Salem, he was trying. They seem to suggest, and I don't care. I'm super excited about the movie. They suggest that, like, this is all of his worst tendencies writ large, like, in one movie.
Mm.
We'll see.
Yeah, I don't know, but like you and I kind of like those tendencies. So
Correct.
Like even in something like Halloween 2, which is mostly derided by people, so there you go, whatever. And then I saw Dirty Grandpa because I hate my life and it's worse than Ride Along 2. It's excruciating. I coughed at one point in the movie and I gave myself a headache from coughing because it was like a phlegmy cough and I'm just like, I had a tickle in my throat and I gave myself a headache and that was more enjoyable than like watching Dirty Grandpa. And I don't know why, but I was kind of excited for Dirty Grandpa before the reviews
came
out.
Well, you like late period De Niro for some reason.
I don't know.
Because you like that boxing movie.
I'm turning around on Zac Efron.
The Intern. You liked Zac Efron. Yeah. You like Aubrey Plaza. You like Aubrey Plaza.
I don't know. But she's gone full Kunis now, where she like was kind of mousy before.
Okay.
But now she's like a babe.
Got it.
So, I don't know. I'm not sure if I like the Babe Aubrey Plaza.
Sure, okay. Because,
like, what's next? The Babe Rashida Jones?
Yeah.
All right.
She's a babe already.
She is kind of a babe already.
She just doesn't, like, play a babe often. Yeah. She doesn't do a whole movie in her underpants, which, based on the trailer, is what Aubrey Plaza is doing.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Yeah. And, like, every line that she has is just, like, she's like, do you want a jizz on my forehead? It's just like, okay, we get it. It's not even a double entendre.
That would be a single entendre.
Yeah. So
it is called Dirty Grandpa.
It is. So it's terrible. And the funniest thing that happened during that movie was when I was sitting, it was at one of the Alamo Drafthouse theaters, and this guy, he goes, the server who's taking the food orders, he's like, are you guys excited about Dirty Grandpa? And everybody's just like, eh, I don't know. And then like this one girl sitting next to me is just like, yes. And he's like, you are the first person to answer in the affirmative to that. It was like a full theater. It was really funny.
That's wild.
Yeah. So that's what I saw.
All right.
Recently. Nothing great.
Well, Kill Bill.
But I mean, everybody knows Kill Bill is great.
I know. But when you watch them back to back, you realize like what a great movie it is.
Yes.
Which is again why I wish it was available as one whole movie, because the first time I ever watched them back to back, it's
a different
probably became like my favorite Tarantino movie. I would never argue it's his best, but like, good lord, do I love it. All right, so we haven't done this What Have You Seen Lately in so long, because we were doing all these year-end shows and Star Wars and all this nonsense. So I was looking, and I've watched, since the last time we did What Have You Seen Lately, which was like first or second week of December, I've seen about 100 movies. So I'm going to pick like 6 at random.
Wow. Okay.
Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Yeah.
First movie I saw of 2016.
Okay. You
rented
started
it
strong.
Last movie I saw of 2015, Vacation Remake.
Okay. So you finished strong.
Oh, boy, did I finish. Week.
Yeah.
I laughed very hard twice.
What parts?
I don't remember. One was in the trailer when the seat turns around.
Oh, okay.
And the other one was car related.
What? No. See, the only part I think that I laughed at in that movie was had something to do with when she goes back to her sorority. I thought that was kind of funny.
No, it was terrible.
Yeah.
Something on the car, like something was on the outside of the car that shouldn't have been. And I was like, that's kind of funny. And then when the seat spun around, I thought that was staged very well. But what a mean-spirited, garbage fucking movie.
Yeah.
And I know people get upset when I say mean-spirited, because I say that too much. But that is a movie, like you said, that just hates everyone.
Yes.
So anyway, the first movie I saw, 26, so I rented those from a Redbox, didn't get to Man from U.N.C.L.E. in 2015, started 2016 with a bang, yo.
Yo.
I liked Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Okay.
I think it has to do with having low expectations.
Mm-hmm.
I loved the aesthetic.
Yep.
Loved the production design, loved the costumes, like I loved the vibe of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
It just needed to be like peppier.
Yeah, I could see that.
You know, like
it needed to be kind of more fun.
It's
kind of soggy a little bit.
Yeah, like let's pick it up a little bit, Guy Ritchie.
That's why I think like every scene where like Alicia Vikander was in it, it was just like, wow, this is like a breath of fresh air.
Yeah.
And then like you get to Henry Cavill and
Who was okay?
What's his name? What's the other guy?
Armie Hammer.
Where it's just kind of like, well, you guys aren't quite up to the charisma level of how she is. But
and Henry Cavill was probably like the best I've seen him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's just kind of wooden. Like there's just not much. I wished it was like a little bit more fun, and I would be like really championing that movie. Mm-hmm. I would be like, oh, this movie got ignored, but it's actually really cool, and it's just like kind of fun. Like I was happy to have seen it.
Yeah, I didn't hate it. I remember just kind of for like thinking it was kind of okay and then forgetting about it.
Yeah, yeah. That's probably about right.
Yeah.
I saw a movie called Blood Rage.
Okay.
Which was just put out on Blu-ray by Arrow Video, and it was a slasher movie shot in like 83, didn't come out till like 87.
Mm-hmm.
Filmmaker, I think, only made that movie ever.
Those are always interesting.
It's nuts, like in the most fun way.
Okay.
It's about twin brothers, one of whom commits a murder when they're kids, frames his twin brother. The twin brother gets sent away to a mental hospital and then gets out when they're like 19, 20, I think. They're supposed to be about 20. And as soon as he gets out, the real murderer brother is like, oh, cool, now I can kill a bunch of people and blame it on him again. And it happens on Thanksgiving. It's like there's no reason to have this twin gimmick.
Yeah,
it makes no sense, but I don't care. And the guy has blood on himself and he keeps just repeating the line, it's not cranberry sauce. And the gore is like out of your mind, like, oh my god, I can't believe I just saw that in this movie. It's one of, I think it was one of the video nasties in the UK. What's her name from Louise Lasser from Mary Hartman? Mary Hartman is in it. She plays like the mom, and she's trying to do this weird indie drama performance, and she's like so over the top, tormented about what's happened to her boy. It's a crazy movie, but like it's super fun.
This sounds June-sploitation-y.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm looking forward to watching it.
It's like 80 minutes, and it's nuts, and it's If you're into these kinds of movies, check out Blood Rage.
Yeah, I it's funny because I either really don't respond to a slasher movie, or I really am in the bag for it. Yeah. But so I'm always hoping for like the next The Burning, where I just really love it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And this might not be it, but it might be.
Okay,
it's more of like a sleepaway camp. Like, what is this movie?
I like sleepaway camp,
and rightfully so.
Yeah, quite a bit.
The Burning, I think, comes closer to being an actual good movie.
Okay.
And Sleepaway Camp is like a crazy movie, and I think Blood Rage is a little bit more of the crazy movie.
Yeah, but I mean, you've mentioned it before. The thing that's great about Sleepaway Camp is it's such a passion project.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I just love those.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Watched a movie called No Tears for the Dead, which is streaming on Netflix, and it's a Korean film from the director of The Man from Nowhere.
I have not seen that.
The Man from Nowhere is awesome.
Okay.
Like, definitely see The Man from Nowhere. Mm-hmm. And I had very high hopes for No Tears for the Dead.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just okay. Like, it's kind of good, but nowhere near what I think the level of quality is of The Man from Nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
I saw Jerusalem.
Okay. That was the one movie that one of the only movies I missed at the Bruce Campbell thing.
We skipped Jerusalem to see the Green Inferno.
Yeah. Did we make the right choice?
Weirdly enough, yes.
Ooh.
Like, and neither of us liked the Green Inferno.
No, we didn't.
But I think I liked it more than Jerusalem.
Is it because of your angst against Jewish people?
It doesn't help.
Okay.
It doesn't help.
That makes
so
sense.
It has an okay idea. Like, I like that it's a horror film shot in Jerusalem.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of about the apocalypse. The big problem is that it's found footage.
No.
And not very good found footage, and it's all done through Google Glass.
Mm-hmm.
And so like every time the character looks at someone, like their Facebook profile shows up, and it takes almost an hour before the horror stuff to start. And it's not as though the first hour is like setting up what's going to come. It's literally just them dicking around the city. And then in the last hour, half hour, you like get glimpses of demons and a giant that walks by. And it is just...
Sounds disappointing.
It's super disappointing. Yeah. And I already don't like kind of the found footage aesthetic.
Yep.
I'm not into it. I can name maybe four found footage movies that I like. I didn't think it worked at all.
What are the four? Do you know what they are off the top of your head?
Cloverfield.
Okay.
That's
a good one.
Blair Witch.
Yep.
I think the first Paranormal Activity is kind of fun. Actually, I like the third one better.
Okay.
Cannibal Holocaust? Does that count?
Yeah, I guess.
That might be it.
You're forgetting Unfriended from that list.
I'm pretty sure I'm not.
I think you are. I think you are. I don't know. What's your cut? Are you excited about 10 Cloverfield Lane? Did you see the preview for that?
I haven't watched it. I mean, I know it exists, and I'm intrigued, but so obviously I'll go see it, but I haven't watched the trailer.
I threw all my Legos when I saw the trailer for that. I was very excited.
I like Cloverfield. I think it's good. This is not found footage, right?
No, it doesn't look like it is.
When that came out, everyone was like, how did they do this without any of us knowing? Like, well, that's how movies used to be made.
Yeah, like, exactly.
If nobody knew to go look at whatever.
No, that's because nobody's, like, pining over the filmographies of John Goodman and Mary Elizabeth Winstead.
I guess.
They are John Gallagher, though, oddly enough. So I'm surprised they missed that.
I took Saturday, I was looking to get my kids out of the house for a little while because my wife was out very late the night before and was tired and wanted to sleep. So I was like, will you nap? I'll take the kids somewhere. There were no movies to go see.
Yeah.
I refused to take them to see Norm of the North.
But that is a 0% tomato meter.
So I looked at the second run theater that's not too far from here. And they were showing Hotel Transylvania 2, which I would have taken them to see, but I had just rented it from Redbox the night before for Charlie, and he liked it. So we ended up going to see Goosebumps.
Yeah, I saw Goosebumps.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was a little nervous about it because my daughter's 3, and I was like, I don't know how scary this is going to be. She handled it fine. When the first monster appeared, it's like the Abominable Snowman.
Okay.
She covered her eyes, which was adorable. And I said, Rosie, it's okay. It's just pretend. And she looked up at me, it's just pretend? I said, yeah. And she watched the rest of the movie.
Okay. Like,
she's very stuck on the last image of the movie. During the credits, it's like an animation during the credits. They show some of the monsters.
Yeah, I remember liking the animation at the end of the
credits.
It's
neat. So the very last image is Slappy the ventriloquist dummy, and his eyes kind of like light up yellow.
Oh.
That's all she's... I didn't like those eyes. I didn't like those, like, for 3 days now. Remember we saw Goosebumps? Yeah, I didn't like those eyes.
Aww.
Like, oh, yeah, right? The last thing before we leave the theater has to fuck her up.
Yeah.
I feel like it was a pretty pleasant surprise. I thought it looked terrible.
Yeah.
And it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, for the first, up until the monsters show up, I was way on board for Goosebumps.
Oddly enough,
the setup was so good.
It's weird, because I had, like, the reverse reaction, where, like, the setup, I was just kind of like, I don't know. I'm not really engaged. I'm not, like, into this.
Yeah.
But then I was really on board with it by the end. Like, I really was having a good time. And that was awesome because I saw it in, like, a pretty big theater by myself completely. So that was sort of neat.
I thought the effects were pretty bad, like, bad CGI. It felt like a 90s movie.
Yeah.
It
definitely has the Hocus Pocus type of feel.
Yeah, like a Casper vibe.
Yeah. Well, there's nothing wrong with that. I still like Casper.
Yeah, there's a place for that. My biggest problem with the movie, honestly, was Jack Black. Like, I didn't really care for his performance. Once the monster showed up, it just turned into, like, a lot of, you know what I mean? Like, a lot of that. But overall, I thought it was a pleasant surprise.
Yep, definitely.
Last movie I'll talk about, I promise. Yesterday, I revisited The Expendables 3.
Okay.
For the first time since the theater.
Yeah. What brought you back to that?
I think writing that Van Damme column made me want to, like, watch an Expendables movie.
Mm-hmm.
And then Saturday night, somehow, we ended up having a Ronda Rousey double feature because...
Entourage?
Entourage was on HBO and we watched it and...
Isn't it garbage?
I think it's the worst movie of last year.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know, because I did see that movie Muck. It's bad in such fast... I mean, we could do a whole show
super
on the
sexist
ways that it is bad.
Yeah.
There is literally no conflict. What little tiny conflict there might be is resolved within the same scene. And you can't, nothing can just sort of, like, barely work out. Not only does it work out, but it wins awards and makes hundreds of millions of dollars. It's like, are you fucking kidding me with this goddamn movie?
It's also a universe where, like, Jessica Alba has, like, the clout to, like, yell at Ari Gold and just be like, I want to produce the movie too and star in it. I'm like, that movie will make $0.
The whole premise of the movie is that Vinny Chase wants to direct his next movie, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Hyde. Hyde?
About a DJ or something. Yeah. That's like a premise for the big screen Entourage movie.
Yeah.
Here's Vinny Chase trying to direct his first. Nope. We skip all of that, mm-hmm. all of it. We don't see him learn how to direct. We don't see him struggle with directing. We just cut to movie's done.
Yep.
And it's amazing. It can't even be like, hey, good job first time out. We're struggling to market that. It's so good. Everyone's, it wins yeah. awards. Oh, yeah. I fucking yeah. hated that movie.
Yeah, it's bad. It's really, really bad.
Evil. Mm-hmm. It's evil. They literally break up. The show was garbage, too. Like, we watched the whole thing, and the first two seasons were like, okay, yeah, fine. This is kind of like the underdog story. They're coming up. And then at a certain point, it just, everything that's wrong with the movie was wrong with the show. But it ends with Kevin Connolly's character finally together with the girl.
Sloane.
Yes, who had like an on-again, off-again thing the whole time. Yep. So the movie starts, and they're broken up.
Mm-hmm.
For no goddamn reason, because, spoilers, they get back together by the end.
Yeah.
The only reason I'm convinced that they broke up was so they could write Kevin Connolly into like a couple fuck scenes with random actresses.
Probably. Cause they had like that really awkward thing where like she tried to convince me she was pregnant or had like a VD or something like that.
Right.
And then,
no, one girl has VD and the other girl's pregnant. And then again,
that's hilarious. But
in the span of a scene, they're like, no, we just know each other. You're off the hook. And he's like, woohoo. There is zero fucking conflict in this movie.
That movie's really, 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 really bad.
It's insidiously bad.
Yeah.
Expendables 3 is not great. That's all. I mean, I wasn't crazy about it when we saw it. If you could cherry pick the things that work from all three,
you
could have a pretty kick-ass movie.
Yeah.
As it is, you have to wade through all the things you don't like to just get to any time Antonio Banderas is on screen.
I own it. It's not something that I ever have picked up and like watched.
I've revisited the other two several times, and I'm not crazy about them. But when I'm in a mood, I'm like, that's what I want to see right now.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I'm thrilled that to see some of those guys on screen again. You know, I don't get to see Dolph Lundgren in many wide release films.
How do you feel about the whole, I know you don't care about the Oscars, but how do you feel about the whole Stallone Oscar thing?
I thought he was great in the movie.
I think he's great in the movie too, but I feel like he wants it so bad that it's like an unappealing side of Stallone. Like,
yeah.
I just kind of want, I don't want to see
it. I think he's
going to
get it because it has the best story and he's got that kind of star power or whatever. Again, it would go down a little bit more easily if Ryan Coogler and Michael B. Jordan were also nominated.
Oscar's so right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? Isn't that what
I
it was?
Believe
everybody's
that's
saying
the
like,
hashtag.
Wow, you got it so right this year.
I hate the Oscars.
Do you think it will take Charlotte Rampling 45 years to apologize to Spike Lee?
It might.
Okay.
I saw Chirac. We could talk about it after the podcast. I liked it way more than you.
Oh, really?
It's a mess.
Yeah.
But, it's kind of a glorious bamboozled mess, I think.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
It's just not. It's just a mess.
No, it's
a piece of shit.
Oh, God. No, it's not at all.
Oh, God.
It's not at all.
All right.
Anyway. 40 minutes ago, we started talking about From Dusk Till Dawn, and we're going to do it, everyone.
Yeah.
20 years, yo.
Who requested this? Because this was a listener request, right?
I'll tell you as soon as I pull up this email. Alex Hobbs mentioned that he would love to hear us talk about it, and just watched it for the first time and said he liked it for the first half and didn't like the second half as much.
Okay.
That's legit.
I mean, yeah.
I like both halves.
It's an opinion that a lot of people share, I would say.
Sure.
Yeah.
Obviously, we're going to be spoiling From Dusk Till Dawn.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah.
Get with it. This was the last movie at a massacre a couple of years ago.
Okay.
It's a good last movie, you know? Like, because you've been watching movies
quick.
For 22 hours, and it's like, hey, this is a good way to go out.
Yeah.
It's a pick-me-up. Apparently, there were some people who had never seen it, and were surprised at the turn halfway through the movie, which I find odd because it's like you're at a horror marathon.
Yeah.
Where did you think this was going to go?
Mm-hmm.
I wonder what it would be like to not know anything about it.
I feel like I would be more disappointed than if I did know what was going to happen.
That's legit, I guess.
Because if I do have... All right, so my history with From Dusk Till Dawn is weird. It's like... I'll watch it once and I'll like it, and then I'll watch it again and then I don't like it as much. I'm never at the point where I don't like the movie, but it's just I'm very, I'll be more mixed on it than anything. And I think part of the reason is that while the movie has really good characters and they have interesting character arcs, I guess, they don't have an interesting story arc, where I think the movie is not really about anything. And by the time it ends, it's not really about anything. It doesn't have to be about anything. I mean, there's a lot of movies like Demon Knight's not about anything, but like, I really love Demon Knight.
Sure.
So, I don't know. I think it's just kind of disappointing with, for me at least, it starts out in a very specific world, and then the second half of it is just this world that doesn't seem to coalesce. It seems disjointed. It seems like two separate movies of a... It seems like if they made Grindhouse and they made the Gecko Brothers movie,
right.
and then they made the Titty Twister movie, those are two separate movies, and then they just happen to have that adjoining scene in the middle with the Salma Hayek dance.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree with that. And I've always liked the movie. I mean, I think it's fun. I completely agree that it's not about anything. It's kind of just an exercise.
Yeah.
It's a real just fucking kitchen sink movie, you know? Yeah. It's like no one's... They're trying to make this kind of movie, and at that, they succeed. I agree that the first half is better in the sense that I think, obviously, the writing is better. The characterization is more interesting. Mm. You get the dynamic between the brothers. Because honestly, once Richie checks out, like, there's almost no characters left.
Yeah.
You get a little bit of Harvey Keitel, but even George Clooney kind of ceases doing any real character work. He's just kind of in badass mode.
Yeah, it's just like a half hour or like 40 minutes of just carnage, and that's fine.
Yeah.
But one thing that I like about a lot of Tarantino movies is the violence in his movies is very quick and just kind of abrupt, and it's not like usually really drawn out. Well, there's some exceptions, but it's not as
drawn.
The House
of Blue Leaves,
obviously. Yeah, there's not like there's not a sequence like that's 40 minutes long
sustained
violence.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So there's nothing wrong with that, but it's just sometimes when you're dealing with somebody of the caliber of a Quentin Tarantino script, you just kind of want more of that, and you don't want that to stop, whereas it kind of seeps into a Robert Rodriguez movie full on almost, I think, for the second half.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
And this might be his best movie, in my opinion.
I mean, I think I like Desperado a little bit more.
Okay.
Yeah,
it's like a toss-up between those two for me.
And again, he started out on kind of a fun path. He was making movies not of great substance, but of, you know, a lot of style.
Yeah.
And the thing that I really admire about From Dusk Till Dawn, in terms of his direction, is his understanding of staging a gag.
Mm-hmm.
He's really good at staging gags. Desperado had a lot of them. This movie is full of them, just gore gags. I mean, he kind of borrows that from Sam Raimi.
Yep.
Some of it can probably be attributed to KNB. I'm sure some of that was stuff they developed. But even on the Laserdisc commentary, they talk about at the beginning when John Hawks is set on fire and falls into the display.
Yeah.
It was written in the script, I think, as Twinkies. And Robert Rodriguez understood that, like, while that might read funny on the page, on screen that doesn't work.
Yeah.
So he made it popcorn, because then you get little popcorn popping, and that's funny. That's a gag, you know? And so that's... Robert Rodriguez brings a ton of energy and a real understanding of gags. But I agree. I mean, I like the second half of the movie just as a horror fan, because it's just wall-to-wall practical effects
it's fun
shit.
Yeah.
But it's like barely a movie, you know?
Yeah, like, I mean, like, if it was part and parcel to a, you know, like a movie that kind of fit the tone of that more in the first half, where if you were watching like a Army of Darkness or a Demon Knight or something like that, and it was like that way the whole way through, then I think for me it would be a little bit more satisfying. Whereas it's just, for some reason, that I just always have like a kind of a mixed feeling by the end of the movie, which I don't have all the way leading up to the bar. The bar, I just enjoy it so much. And I think that there's a lot of just like my favorite stuff, even though I really like a lot of the gore gags, and I'm a fan of K&B, and I think they're magicians. They're just fantastic craftsmen, and I just love to see their work. And, you know, Robert Kurtzman is also, I mean, like, I personally like seeing somebody like a Robert Kurtzman, like, have such a success with this movie, where it's obviously like a vision of his that he, it was his story, and he got Tarantino to write the script for it in exchange for doing the ear splicing scene in Reservoir Dogs. Yeah. Because I met Kurtzman at a convention at a Flashback Weekend, and he was one of the nicest people you could possibly ever meet. And he was talking to me about this movie he was developing, which never even came out. It's just kind of sad. But, like, he signed my Wishmaster poster, and he was so flattered that, like, I had the poster for the movie that he directed.
Yeah.
And he basically, like, walked me around and introduced me to, like, the other guest that was there.
That's awesome.
It was just so nice. It was, like, I felt like, I forget, this would make more sense back when I originally thought it. But, like, there's a scene in the movie The Master where, like, Philip Seymour Hoffman's like dancing around a room and just like with, and there's like the scene with like the naked women and stuff like that.
I sort of remember.
That was what it felt like.
I saw that movie once, like at that premiere, and okay. I haven't seen it since.
That's so. What it felt like. It felt like Robert Kurtzman was Philip Seymour Hoffman, and he was just like dragging me around. He's like, meet these naked women. And it was just like, and then everybody was like, hey, hey, Adam's here. Adam's here, and he's our guy. He's our guy. He signed a Wishmaster poster. All right. So it was like, it was super fun. So seeing, you know, this movie just be like such a success is gratifying in that way. But there, a lot of my favorite sequences, the ones that come back to me that I think about a lot, are how effective it is in all the scenes with the first hostage that they take.
Yeah.
And the speeches that like Clooney delivers to her about like his bullets are faster than she is. And, like, she wouldn't say shit if she had a mouth full of it. And, like, there's so many just great lines that are said there. And then, like, when you find out what happens to her, how Richie kills her, like, when Seth Gecko leaves, it's such a, it's so effectively
the
shot,
editing is.
The edited.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, with just the really quick flashes.
And his reactions.
And it's like Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer level of violence.
Yeah.
And his reactions to it and everything like that. And it's just so effective. And, but the dynamic between Tarantino and Clooney is really interesting because he loves his brother more than anything else, and he's going to defend his brother, but like he knows that fundamentally what this guy is doing is detestable.
Yeah.
But it's something where that's one thing that's kind of interesting. It's like this, and I mentioned it earlier in reference to Kill Bill, it's like this familial loyalty, like this code of ethics amongst criminals and amongst like, you know, thieves and everything like that, that I just find really interesting. And it's funny, I have to sort of remind myself every once in a while that this is not a Tarantino movie, that this is a Rodriguez movie.
Yeah,
it feels more like a Tarantino movie, especially in that first half to me.
I think some of the dialogue does, but I mean, for me, the editing and the directorial choices always feel like Robert Rodriguez.
Okay.
And I love some of it, you know, like I love the cut on everybody be cool, you be cool. Like,
yeah.
I love the way he cuts that. And I'm a big fan of Clooney in this movie. A lot of people, I think, don't love him.
Yeah.
I mean, he's obviously making a very conscious choice to kind of break free of his ER image at the time.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of like cool for cool's sake. But I think he sells the shit out of it, you know?
Yeah. It's very like a lot of head and neck acting,
which
is fine, but
he did
just,
for a long time.
He
kind of
really
broke
time.
Himself
yeah.
of that habit,
yeah.
not even fully, but
yeah.
Oh, it's all just like tilting his head a little bit. And
yeah.
like, I admire how dark they're willing to go with that hostage thing.
Yeah.
And again, they even talk about it, I think, on the commentary, how important it was to cast somebody who didn't look like someone out of central casting to,
mm-hmm.
to get some hot woman or whatever. You wanted somebody who just looked like she didn't belong there, who looked like she really did work at that bank. I mean, it's fucked up. And again, sometimes it's like hard to reconcile that with like the violence later on is so goofy and fun versus the kind of real world violence of the beginning. This movie's a very kind of strange animal.
There's nothing quite like it, really, that I can think of in, like, the horror genre, at least, where you have two halves that are just so tonally different.
Yeah. Like, so different.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing horror, you know, really about the first half, and then it just all of a sudden becomes this nonstop gore fest, you know?
Yeah.
It's also important to, I think, contextualize this with like 90s Tarantino. And we'll talk about this, I think, in a little bit when we bring up the documentary, but like, and again, at the time I was so in the bag for just anything Tarantino, any book that they would write and like anything that I would go see Destiny Turns on the radio in the theater, you know, like, he was saying yes to a lot more shit. Like now he's, I think, way more particular and it's like, well, I make my movies and that's it, you know? Yeah. So he'll show up on an episode of the Margaret Cho sitcom and he'll...
I saw that. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. All-American Girl.
Yes. And he'll write this movie for...
He'll direct an
right. He'll direct an ER and he'll show up on Alias for a while and he'll... He'll write this movie, which feels like something he kind of knocked out in an afternoon, you know? Like, and he'll... And actually... He gets a lot of shit for his acting because early on he wanted to act so much that you almost felt like he made movies so he could put himself in them.
Yeah. That was one question I have for you because I do not think that he's a bad actor.
I've seen him not be great in stuff.
Yeah.
I think he's fine in his own movies. Like I've always been fine with him in Pulp Fiction. I've always been fine with him in Reservoir Dogs.
Yeah.
I like him in this movie.
Yeah.
I think he gives a good, interesting performance, and not to keep referencing this goddamn commentary, but they point out that Richie originally had a bunch of like cool lines. He was like the funny one. He was the wisecracker. And Tarantino, I think, I don't know if he was always going to play him or what, but maybe so it was either after Tarantino was cast or after Clooney was cast. At some point, he started throwing all those lines to Clooney and making himself talk a lot less, which is a really good decision. Not because like that means less Tarantino acting, but because I think that's right for the character. It makes the character better and more interesting and a little bit scarier and kind of more,
and more mysterious
up.
Yeah. And stuff like that. Yeah. You don't know what he's thinking because odds are, I mean like the, it's going back to like the Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer thing. One of the reasons why Michael Rooker in that movie is so scary is that he's so dull.
Right.
He's just a dull guy.
Right.
He's not colorful. He's not spouting out one-liners or hipster dialogue or anything like that. And neither is really Tarantino in this movie. He's just, you don't know what this crazy asshole is thinking. And like that makes it even more scary because of that. He seems formidable. And the thing that I like, I mean, I agree with you that I like the Clooney performance overall. I mean, there's a lot of like his early mannerisms that kind of are, you know, get him in the way, but like not too much. He needs to be very larger than life. He needs to be, because the Richard Gecko character that Tarantino plays is very, you know, outsized and it's creepy and everything like that. But you need to have somebody who's going to be the alpha to that.
Right.
And Clooney is more than game and charismatic enough to carry that and pull that off.
Right.
And that's something that I've, I mean, it's just kind of like that star power thing. So it's, even if it's not like great acting, it's just like great charismatic movie star acting.
Right.
In that sense.
And again, understood the movie that he was in and he just needs to be cool, you know, and he is, he works at that. And again, those two together are fun to watch. And that's kind of what takes you through the first half, even though they do some horrible stuff, you know, it's like they're fun enough to watch that you're willing to see where they go. And again, as that kind of melts away in the vampire half, all you have really are the gags. Mm-hmm. I mean, I like that they do stock the bar in terms of survivors with Fred Williamson and Tom Savini and like people that it's fun to hang out with, you know, although at the time I'm sure in 96, I mean, it's impossible for me to believe this movie's 20 years old.
It's crazy.
Those names didn't mean as much to me then as they do now. Sure. You know, I've seen way more of Fred Williamson's movies and more aware of Tom Savini's importance. You
I was
know?
Like, that's the guy from Original Gangsters.
Had that come out already?
Or
I feel
maybe
like that came
later.
Out after.
Maybe
that
was later.
Oh, that movie's disappointing. This really, I feel like, is one of the last kind of...
Like dimension type of
like practical effects horror movies. We still get them, but they're indie now.
Yeah,
Because there is some CGI, and it's a little bit wonky. Like, it's not the best. It never takes you out of the movie, mm-hmm. but, like, I'm thinking of the guy melting on the pool table.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, all the melting effects or the fire effects look like After Effects.
Yeah. Or some of the transformations. I mean, they're fine because they're fast enough. Yeah.
The makeups, though, it looks phenomenal. And, yeah. I mean, like, some of the creature work and everything like that, that's really neat still.
It's just so, and you, even though you know they're just ripping off giant pieces of rubber and latex, like, that's part of the fun of it, you know, and just how messy the movie's willing to get. There's no rules to it. Like, it doesn't actually make any sense, and they don't really treat vampires like vampires at all.
No, they're zombies.
Basically, yeah. But even, like, the one where the mouth opens in the stomach, it's just like, well, what is that?
I heard they were supposed to do more with that, but, like, the gag was so gross that, like, Tarantino didn't want to look at it.
Yeah.
So, like, it's, like, B-roll footage now.
Right,
like,
and it's fine. It gets the one gag where, like, the head gets bitten off, and that's fine, but it's, like, they made up a rule for the sake of one gag, you know? And again, I could give a shit. It's fine. It's fun.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this is like kind of one of the last really great wall-to-wall practical effects movies of the 90s, because then from here, now things start shifting towards CGI. Wishmaster is another one, actually. The effects in Wishmaster are unbelievable.
They're phenomenal, yeah.
I wish the movie was better, Master.
I don't know.
It's okay. Again, the first 15 minutes knock your socks off so hard.
I think it's a tonny funny. I almost like it because it's so bad in a certain way. Like,
sure.
I enjoy it just not even ironically. I just like how stupid it is.
Right.
But anyways, that's for our Wishmaster podcast.
Which is coming. Don't you worry, everyone.
You and Primero should do the Wishmaster series.
I don't know if I could. What happened with Robert Rodriguez? Like, he starts off, El Mariachi is a movie made by somebody who's hungry and inventive, and Desperado is what happens when you give that guy some money, and From Dusk Till Dawn.
It's gotta be scripts.
Is him flexing a certain muscle, and then, you know, like,
I mean, it's maybe just a film, because he's a stylist more than like a storyteller, so maybe he just ran out of things
to say.
But he's
almost not a good stylist anymore, right? I mean,
I mean, like, that's true. Like, because you look at like Machete Kills, and it's just like this,
right?
It's like eating a fucking like 13-day-old biscuit. It's
just
disgusting.
And why shouldn't Machete Kills be exactly like From Dusk Till Dawn?
No, you're absolutely right.
You know, it should have had the same feel. It should have had the same energy. It should have still had, like, the same violence to crime stuff ratio. You know, like, all it should have been From Dusk Till Dawn. And good Lord, is it not?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, the only thing I could chalk it up to is that he's just very self-conscious now, where he wasn't maybe early in his career.
Maybe.
Like, 'cause From Dusk Till Dawn actually wasn't even supposed to be him making it. It was originally, I forgot who was supposed to, Kurtzman was supposed to direct it.
Yeah.
And, like, Kurtzman didn't want to direct it for whatever reason, and then they offered it up to Robert Rodriguez, and he, like, jumped at it because he really liked the material. And so maybe that's it. Maybe it's something that's not his baby. Maybe, like, the fact that he had that disassociation with it a little bit is something that was kind of helpful.
Maybe Tarantino is his lucky charm, because Tarantino's in Desperado.
Yeah.
He wrote From Dusk Till Dawn. He directed a scene in Sin City.
Yeah.
Those, I think, might be the three best Robert Rodriguez movies.
Oh, they sure are. Yeah.
Well, I mean, the first two Spy Kids, I actually think, are okay.
I've never sat and watched one through the whole way.
I mean, you're fine. Yeah. But the first two, I think, are okay. So maybe Tarantino's just his lucky charm.
Possibly. Yeah, I don't know. I've never been, like, the biggest Robert Rodriguez fan, so, like, I've never kind of been disappointed that his career has gone so sideways. It's just been, like, wow, this is a guy who constantly disappoints me. That's kind of how I feel.
Well, again, in the 90s, you know, post-Tarantino, I started following all these filmmakers because it opened me up to this new world. So, you know, Kevin Smith and Alison Anders and Robert Rodriguez and all these people who kind of got their start during that decade as part of that indie movement.
Mm-hmm.
I was following all of them and connected with Robert Rodriguez because he was making, you know, movies that I liked to see. He was making action movies and horror movies and stuff.
Yeah.
And I feel like really after From Dusk Till Dawn, it's like diminishing returns. The Faculty's okay, you know.
Yeah.
I liked Sin City, but, like, he's never done anything that I enjoy as much as either Desperado or From Dusk Till Dawn. And again, I won't make the argument that either is a great film.
Mm-hmm.
I just think they're like fun, you know?
Yeah, no, I totally know what you mean. So what do you think? We've talked about Tarantino. We talked about Clooney.
Yeah.
But I think you had said it before, and I completely agree with you. I think the best performance is Harvey Keitel.
Yeah.
He's really good
yeah.
in this movie. Like, he's very different from how I've usually seen him in movies.
Right.
He's playing much more of a normal guy.
Right.
But he does it really well. You see, like, he's got a whole life that he's lived, and that's partly credit to the writing. But, I mean, like, he seems very weathered, and, like,
yeah.
you believe everything that he's saying about, like, his wife passing and him losing his faith. And it's all in his face, and it's all in his body language, and, like, his clothing and his demeanor and everything like that, that this is just this broken man. And not that it's, like, the, whatchamacallit, the divine intervention that he necessarily wanted, like, running into these vampires. But,
right.
like, he sort of gets his faith back a little bit by the end. In the sense that, like, there's that line that Clooney says where if these are from hell, then there has to be a heaven.
Right.
So, I mean, like, if there's a heart to this movie or, like, a soul to this movie,
yeah.
he's that.
For sure.
Yeah.
And I think without him, the second half almost doesn't work at all.
Yeah.
Not just because of what you're talking about, that arc and bringing some substance to it, but... Mm-hmm. Because of how much he commits to the material and kind of legitimizes it.
Yeah.
Juliette Lewis is a fine actress, but doesn't have a part to play.
Mm-hmm.
Clooney is basically there to be tough and kill vampires.
Yeah.
So Harvey Keitel really is left with all of the heavy lifting kind of emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
And he's great. I mean, he's not... I'm always drawn more to like the Gecko brothers just as characters,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
And maybe that just has to do with my own relationship to religion or whatever. But
mm-hmm.
I think he's a really interesting character and he plays the shit out of it, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Ernest Liu as Scott Fuller.
Crushes it.
Has he been in any other movies?
I honestly don't know.
Yeah.
I don't feel like he has. And again, I respect...
Well, he's pretty good.
He's fine.
Yeah.
He seems kind of natural.
Yeah.
And I respect...
He doesn't get the lap dance that Richie offered him, though. And
true.
I thought that it was kind of offensive that he had to get a lap dance from the one Asian vampire.
Like, I like that the movie never explains that.
Yeah.
How Harvey Keitel has an Asian kid.
Yeah.
We don't see the mom. The mom could be Asian, although mm-hmm. Juliette Lewis, in theory, then should be Asian.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's really interesting. I respect the movie's decision to kill him, you know, because most movies
really,
wouldn't.
Yeah, they really... Just in the original script I read, like, all of them survive, like all the geckos and all the Fullers survive, and then Tarantino decided that it would be more exciting if there were victims, so he made the right choice.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's true. I probably would have been fine if they all lived as
yeah.
well, you know, although in theory
it's like what have you learned, Richard Gecko?
Yeah, exactly. like
what is the point?
You kind of can't let
yeah.
Richie go because
no.
he's just such a fucking menace to society.
Yeah.
And so is Seth, but it's suggested that Seth is going to a place
where he's like
he fits
a
in.
Den of thieves.
Right,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
And I love the way that that's just hint El Rey, right?
Yeah.
That's just hinted at.
Mm-hmm.
And this movie, near the end of this movie, and I'm going to mess it up. So I can't look up Ernest Liu. I'm trying to do it on IMDb, and I keep getting just an error. It just says, "Doh, there's an error message." Like, So I'm sorry, listeners. We don't know the answer to the Ernest Liu question.
If you're listening, Ernest, send us a comment.
Yeah, yeah,
just
yeah.
Let us know that you're
yeah.
okay.
Just be like, I'm here, guys. I'm
yeah.
here.
Say,
I'm here and I'm listening.
I'm
ready?
In Precinct 13.
I'm ready to work. So I can't remember if it's bastard or asshole. Is it bastard? I may be a bastard.
I'm
not a fucking bastard.
Yeah.
That is for real one of my favorite lines of dialogue ever written.
Yeah.
I don't know if I could explain why.
Well, it's so...
The first time I heard it, I was like, that makes sense to me.
Yeah, it makes absolutely... yeah. Well, it's like the line in Jackie Brown where he's like, my ass may be dumb, but I ain't no dumbass. And I'm just like, yes,
right.
I completely get it.
Right.
Yeah. I just want... By the way, like, I caught maybe like the last hour and 15 minutes of Jackie Brown on cable. I haven't seen that in such a long time. And
yeah.
it's... Oh my God. Is that movie phenomenal? I always crack up towards the end of that movie when, like, when Samuel L. Jackson's just in his fuck it period where his hair is all crazy and he looks like the Crypt Keeper and everything like that. I just fucking love it. I just think it's so great. It's so good. He's just like every line, he's just like, better be motherfucker. Better be like everything he says is calling Robert Forster motherfucker. It's great. There better be my motherfucking money in there. I'm gonna kill you your ass first, motherfucker.
I think it's a fascinating choice to bridge the two halves of the movie with the lap dance, with the dance.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's a great scene, great memorable scene.
Well,
not
sure.
Not just for the obvious reasons, but
right. I mean, I had already gone through puberty when I saw the movie, but if I hadn't, I feel like that scene would have spontaneously brought it on.
Can I gotta tell you my Dust Till Dawn story from seeing this in the theater, because I think I have written about it. Do you remember that column I did where it was like the worst theater experiences?
I think so.
Okay, Dust Till Dawn was one of them. And the reason was I saw it in a full theater and I'm sitting there and I'm like 13, maybe 14, something like that. And these group of like teenagers who were probably like a couple of years older than me, they turned around and they were just calling me like the F word for the entire movie. And like it really try that at a movie theater and watch it take somebody out of watching a movie.
Yeah, right.
And it was so like weird. And I remember like being so upset like that was going on that I can't disassociate my experience watching Dust Till Dawn. So every time I watch it, I'm just like half expecting some kid to turn around and just be like throwing slurs at me for some reason. Yeah.
Teenagers are the worst.
They're bad.
They're
news.
Awful. So the night I saw from Dust Till Dawn.
Yeah.
Which was opening night, 1996, 20 years ago, as of a few days ago. I remember, one, being amazed by the sound mix. It was one of the first times I'd ever really noticed, like, specific surround sound choices in the theater that I saw it, where when the bats are flying, it sounds like they're in the back. Like, I remember being really blown away by that. So on the way home from the movie, I was with my girlfriend at the time, who I dated like all through high school, and I got in my first and only car accident. Somebody hit our car, and I remember the light it was at, and every time I go through that light I relive it. It wasn't, you know, nobody was badly hurt, I just was like freaked out more than anything. Our car stops, the woman who hit us kept going and like kind of pulled into a parking lot or something. The girl that I was with on foot fucking chases after that car. And I was like, I would not have had the presence of mind to even do that.
Yeah.
And I thought it was such
to like get the plate.
Yeah. I just thought it was like such a badass move that she took off on foot after the car and like chased the woman down. Cause she did pull into a parking lot, and then the woman just like never showed up to court or whatever. But that's what I always associate with watching From Dusk Till Dawn. So how interesting that we both have these
weird
negative
stories.
Memories.
Yeah. And that woman's name was Santanico Pandemonium.
Lowly dog, by your head.
There's no escaping here.
I don't like to talk about the physical attractiveness of actresses on this podcast. I don't want to reduce them to how they look. But from the first time I saw Desperado, I mean, like,
Bulls rush it.
I'm in love with Salma Hayek.
Yeah.
Like, she's so underused in From Dusk Till Dawn, and yet what she's used for is like, again, she's so objectified, right? And it sucks. And God bless her for being good enough friends with Robert Rodriguez to be willing to do it.
Yeah.
But it is something, you know, and again, the way it's shot is,
well, it's just, it's funny because a lot of movies are afraid of just being sexy nowadays, and that's like just such a sexy scene.
Yeah,
it's just,
yeah,
it's just nice
without being like pornographic.
No, not at all. It's like, I remember when I saw Mulholland Drive like in college. I saw it at the student union. Yeah. I was there with my girlfriend at the time, and I remember after it was over, she looked at me and she was just like, "What'd you think of that?" And I was just like, "It was really good. It was really weird. And I kind of want to have sex right now." And then she's just like, "Ah." And I'm like, "No, I'm serious. That was like a really sexy movie. Like, that's exactly
the guy behind the dumpster you're talking about."
Oh man, God!
Nick Nolte in his hat. I'm sorry, that's Mulholland Falls.
Oh my God! Oh my
Silencio.
God! Silencio.
There is no band.
A walk in the woods.
It always comes back to Nolte when we're on the podcast together. So, again, if you didn't know anything about this movie, you watch the first half and you're like, okay, it's about these criminals and this family. Like, mm-hmm. we got to make it work. And how are they going to get out of this? And that's kind of interesting. And then they stop at this bar. Okay. And then it lulls you into this other thing for 5 minutes straight where you're just hypnotized by how incredibly beautiful Salma Hayek is.
Yep.
And then seconds later, it's like, and now it's this.
Yeah.
And again, if you had no idea where it was going, I mean, I can't even fathom how you must react to, like, wait, what the fuck just happened?
You would probably have more of a reaction than the characters in the movie did. The characters in the movie, like, are kind of, they accept it very quickly that this is the situation.
Yes.
And if I'm not saying that's a downfall of the movie, but it's just something that's kind of interesting.
Yes.
There's just so quick to be like, and I think you said it because you were talking about it in reference to the massacre that you saw with JB. I think you mentioned something to the effect of that it's a movie that exists in like 90-second intervals.
Yes.
And that's very true. So it's just like, oh no, I had to kill my brother who turned into a vampire. 90 seconds later, like, that's off the table. That's forgotten about.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because we're on to like the next gag, sort of, you know. And then Tom Savini's a thing for a couple minutes and then he's gone. And then Fred Williams is a thing for a couple minutes and then he's gone. And then the balloons are a thing and then those are gone, you know. Mm. I've always liked, and as much as I don't advocate, you know, calling women fucking bitches, I've always really liked Richie's reaction when he gets bit and dies.
Yeah.
That he kind of says fucking bitch and he goes down like hard, you know. And again, old Robert Rodriguez was really good at cuts that had a real impact. And I don't mean like an emotional impact necessarily. Like, there's a rhythm to his cutting that makes when Tarantino drops to his knees feel like he's about 100 pounds heavier than he is. You know, and part of it is sound as well. Again, bringing up the commentary, Tarantino said that, like, somebody saw the movie and they said, wow, you were really scary in that movie. And he wanted to point out, well, yeah, because every time I'm on screen, Rodriguez has like this, like, in the background, this sound effect where you just get freaked out by Richie vision, you know?
Yeah.
And I do love that little touch. I mean, it gets a big, big laugh, but Richie, would you please lick my pussy? Like, it's such a funny, very brief glimpse into how Richie sees the world, you know? Oh, and again, it's like, it's actually not funny when you think back to the bank teller and you're like, well, look at what it leads to. It's actually horrible.
Yeah.
But it does get a big laugh because of the timing of it.
Well, I mean, like, Tarantino is just so great at that gallows type of humor. He's able to get away with murder in his movies. I mean, like, it's, you need somebody of that caliber of a writer to be able to play both games where, because the stuff that he's dealing with is so horrific. Like, even, you know, in The Hateful Eight, like, they're throwing out, like, the most racist dialogue that you could think, but like there's certain times where like a line with the n-word in it is funny,
sure,
and it's meant to be funny,
right?
So
and you're never laughing at the use of the word,
laughing at
unless you're a horrible racist,
exactly, but you're laughing at the delivery of the actor, or you're laughing at you know, like, just the sheer like chutzpah almost, right, of like the fact that it's used. So I mean, like, Tarantino's always been good for that, like, in his career.
Again, this movie exists in a very 90s
It's super 90s
place.
Yeah.
You know, even Clooney just branching out into movies, and Tarantino acting and writing a movie that he's not directing, and Juliette Lewis being a thing, you know.
You know what's funny? Like, Juliette Lewis was never somebody that I was like, oh, I have a crush on Juliette Lewis. Sure. But like, slowly over the years, I'm kind of like, I kind of like Juliette Lewis.
It's fascinating in this movie because she's just normal. You know what I mean? And like, in the 90s, she was usually like, well, let's let her play white trash or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Cape Fear, obviously, she's really good in that movie and doing something very specific. She's not white trash, but like, there's nothing about this role that would command an actress of Juliette Lewis's caliber or fame, you know, and yet here she is just being this normal person and kind of becoming a badass at the end. It's super, super 90s, though, again. And the 90s were a weird time for horror films. So I feel like this does stand out.
Yeah, it's one of the best ones of the decade,
right? Just for,
sure.
for its energy and the, again. But let's use this as a segue into
Full Tilt Boogie. All right. So I had a lot of problems with Full Tilt Boogie.
I can't imagine why.
Okay. All right. So let's frame it from the standpoint of, I remember like when I was taking notes for this show, when I was thinking about From Dusk Till Dawn, I go through, I have like a list of notes whenever I'm reviewing a movie and I'm just trying to like get ideas of like what I want to talk about. And one of the things I have there is a quote from Gene Siskel, and it's always, is this movie as interesting as a documentary of watching the actors have lunch together? Full Tilt Boogie is basically that, except you're not watching the actors have lunch together, you're watching the fucking grips and electricians and, like, all of them have lunch together. And From Dusk Till Dawn is so much more interesting than the making of From Dusk Till Dawn. From the making of From Dusk Till Dawn, this Full Tilt Boogie movie... With all due respect to the woman who made it, because I'm sure she's a nice lady, and I'm sure she's never made another movie after that, and I mean, like, this was probably just some kind of little passion project for her, and she didn't have all the access that she needed to get, like, the juicy material and whatnot, but it is a colossal, fucking terrible documentary.
Terrible.
It is awful, and, like, it starts off being awful right from the beginning, where they have that completely misguided sequence where, like... They're doing a walk to Stayin' Alive with Clooney and Tarantino.
Yep.
And then one of his fans comes out and says, oh, you inspired me. Can you sign my poster? And they rip up his poster and call him a fag and stuff. And it's just so, like, mean. And then they stop where, like, a woman who's cute will stop them. And they're just like, oh, cool with that. But, like, the guy who they want, who wanted their attention is, you know, a horrible human being and stuff like that. And that just, like, immediately threw me off. I'm just like, what is this movie? So, what I mentioned earlier in the show, sometimes you kind of want to know less about the people that you admire from an artistic standpoint. I want to know less about Tarantino berating crew people about beer orders. Right. I want to know less about him calling his, what he thinks of his male fans who are, you know, the film geek fans.
Well, again, that was like all staged and it's so dumb.
It's such a misguided thing though. Like, what else are you supposed to think?
It's supposed to be funny, and it's supposed to like show them as like obnoxious celebrity Hollywood types, but it's like, why do you even have time to be doing this?
Yeah,
like,
it's so smug.
It's super smug. And the whole documentary is like a weird kind of vanity project, and it's the kind of thing that could only exist in the 90s when Tarantino was really starting to blow up and somebody's like, let me do a making of, you know, a feature-length documentary about the making of this movie. And it's like, yeah, of course, because I'm Tarantino, and let's do this hilarious thing at the beginning and it'll be so funny and it'll make us seem, you know, like spoiled brat Hollywood types. But the thing about the beer later is real.
Yeah.
And I had the exact same reaction. So part of me is like, I don't want to know anything about him. Part of me is trying to be forgiving because I'm like, okay, this was 96.
Another,
like,
one that stuck out was when he was talking about, he's like, Bruce Willis told me on the set, I could fuck any one of these girls on the set, but I'm not going to because I'm a nice guy. And
awful.
Stuff like that. Yeah.
All of the, I mean, I just had terrible. Such douche chills, right?
Yes, yes.
So in one way, I think it's interesting as a document of like, here's this guy reaching like Troy Duffy levels of douchebaggery, which I hope he has outgrown and think he has. I mean, I think he is a more mature person and filmmaker.
Yeah.
So on that level, I think it's interesting, but I had the exact same reaction. I'm like, I wish I wasn't seeing this. That's the best stuff in the movie, because the rest of the movie,
the rest of the movie is mostly
about a union issue.
Yes.
It was like she realized she didn't have enough material.
Oh God.
About the making of the movie, because there's actually very little about the making of this movie.
There's stuff about the making of the opening scene.
Right.
There's stuff about maybe a couple of the gags in the bar. But then the rest of it is, like you said, there's a scene where there's a guy making sure that everybody gets health insurance forms. And you see right. him passing out the health insurance right. forms to probably 24 people.
And what side are we supposed to come down on? Because
the union or the non-union? Because right. they're not, it's a non-union crew. Right. And then they're just like bitching about like, oh, I'm a vegan and I ordered a cheese sandwich. I had to pay for it out of my own pocket. And like, you would think that all they did is party and like bitch about union stuff the right. entire time, and like there's nothing about the craft of making this movie. And like
Robert Rodriguez is never shown to really be directing. Like people will approach him and ask him a question and he's just like playing guitar. It's yeah. so bizarre.
It's really, really a terrible documentary.
And maybe my favorite part was there's a title card where it was like Harvey Keitel didn't agree to be interviewed for this movie. Because he signed on to make
From Dusk Till Dawn,
not Full Tilt Boogie. Yeah. And I was like, ugh. Like, you know he said those words. Yeah. And while I don't blame him, it's just like, ugh, you insufferable douche. But then he is interviewed, mm-hmm. and what he says makes no goddamn sense. And it's like,
yeah.
crap actor speak.
Yeah.
And that's all we see of Harvey Keitel. Ernest Liu, totally never seen in the movie. What's yeah. up with that? Salma Hayek, never seen. I mean, she was probably on set for one day, but
yeah.
still.
Yeah. Ernest Liu would have been like, I mean, maybe Ernest Liu was the one who said only 2 kegs of beer.
That is just embarrassing again. Like,
so, like.
I don't know. I guess.
He's just like, because Crash knows who it was. And it's just like, oh my God, just fucking stop.
We only
please.
Have 2 and we wanted 3. Like a grip. Oh, stop. Yeah, you look, yeah. you are not coming off well.
Yeah.
It's a fucking garbage movie. Like, yeah. it's a piece of shit documentary. It's on Netflix instead. If you
That's
guys
how
want
I
to
watched it. I watched it in my hotel room.
I'm like, still holding on downtime. To my yeah. non-anamorphic collector series DVD.
Okay.
Because the second disc is Full Tilt Boogie, and because the commentary from the Laserdisc, which I had,
uh-huh.
and used to listen to that commentary a lot, because it was like the first and only one Tarantino had done for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fun. I mean, it's him and Robert Rodriguez. Again, it's like a little bit of like, I wish, okay, what was I like 20 years younger? You know, like what kind of dumb shit did I say?
Yeah.
So I'm still hanging on to it because none of that stuff was carried over to the Blu-ray, unfortunately.
Okay.
But yeah, Full Tilt Boogie is on Netflix if you want to watch a garbage documentary shot on film to its credit.
Yeah, good
documentary
for them.
Was shot on film.
Good on them. So you can see on film. Grips in a hot tub.
Yeah, I mean, it's and people complaining out. That they're tired and like, yeah. I'm sure they are. And I never got the sense that like this movie was so much harder to make than other movies because
yes.
I feel like all movies are hard to make and you're always tired.
Also, I mean, as a huge movie fan, like nothing interests me less than the production of a movie. Mm. I don't know why. It's just always been that way. Like, I like listening to interviews. Like, if there's a Charlie Rose interview, I love listening to, like, people talk about their filmmaking techniques and processes. But, like, I don't care about what crew does. Like, I love that they're doing it, and they obviously yeah. are very skilled. They're professionals, and no knock on any crew members who might listen to this or anything like that. I value your work. I think it's amazing. I understand that it's part of your efforts that make a movie what it makes, what a movie is. But at the same time, I just, like, I don't watch behind-the-scenes stuff. And, like, that Full Tilt Boogie thing is just so inside baseball about, like...
It's so self-indulgent. Like, the whole yeah, thing is so self-indulgent. Yeah, and it just, it has no reason to exist. None whatsoever.
No.
Except to chronicle, like, Tarantino's huge now. And yeah. let's make a documentary, you know. I will watch any, like, retrospective documentary. I love those when they, like, interview cast members 20
oh, yeah.
years after.
Yeah,
love
those,
that
those
shit.
Those are interesting.
Love it.
Yeah.
Will hardly ever watch a behind the scenes. And yet, here's where I'm a hypocrite, because I think Project Greenlight is like fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all making of, you know?
Well,
I mean, it's intercut
to be
with
like deliberately train wrecks, though.
Yeah, and it's yeah. like fucking scripted, you yeah. know, practically. Yeah. So it's shaped into a watchable narrative, because, yeah, just like raw footage of the making of a movie is not compelling.
Right, right. So I wrote down Fangoria movie, and I think that kind of goes back to like the 90s practical effects type movies.
Yeah.
This is such a Fangoria type movie. It's yeah. like the movie that like Fangoria is itching for because they know they can get like 2 full issues with like pictures and
yeah.
stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
That was one thing that I used to love doing when I was younger, was like going to like a Walgreens, and they'd have like Freddy's Dead issue of Fangoria, and just like looking at the pictures, and I knew I couldn't see the movie yet, but yeah. I'm just like, oh my god!
I never once bought an issue of Fangoria.
I've never bought one, but like,
and yeah. I was always so put off because like the cover that I always remember is Ronnie Cox's eyeballs coming out at the end of Total Recall.
Yeah,
and that shot has always disturbed me so much, like still in my adult life. I don't like that image at all. And so when I think of Fangoria, that's what I picture. And so oh, I okay. never want to buy it.
Interesting.
But I so remember the Entertainment Weekly double issue where they were advertising, you know, the fall preview.
Yeah.
And it had Vampire in Brooklyn in there. And I think it had Clockers and it had From Dusk Till Dawn. And I feel like that was the first time I'd ever heard about From Dusk Till Dawn. And okay. I was like, wait a second. Quentin Tarantino wrote a vampire movie and he's in it? And my head was exploding and I could not wait to see this goddamn movie.
Yeah. The first time I saw a commercial from Dusk Till Dawn was when I was watching reruns of Tales from the Crypt on Fox, and I was so out of my mind excited when right? I saw it. I mean, like,
I think I saw it like four times theatrically.
I only saw it once, but that yeah. was just because the
I'm a little bit older, yeah. so I was yeah, able to go.
You're right. I got lucky being able to like be let in
right.
the first time.
Right.
But, I've seen it probably, I mean, like I watched it again this weekend and I think that's probably like 10, 15 times
yeah.
I've seen it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's been a lot.
It's fun. It's super yeah. watchable.
I just watched it during Scary Movie Month too.
Right.
Yeah.
And I feel like it really does just like the conversation always kind of boils down to like, which half do you like better?
Yeah,
which is a legitimate conversation because it is such a bipolar kind of a thing. And I just kind of reconcile like that the two halves are very different and I enjoy both of them for very different reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Do I think that they cohere into like a legitimately really good movie? No, probably not. But I think
it's so much better than most of the alternatives that it's just kind of like...
And this is what they set out to make. Yeah, just a big, it's all, fun, bloody,
exactly.
crazy movie. And yeah. that's exactly what it is.
Yeah, it completely succeeds on its intentions. So.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I had that conversation a little bit with Heather a couple weeks ago where she was giving me shit about a 5 out of 5 that I gave to a movie. And I said, no, to me, a 5 out of 5 doesn't mean like this movie's perfect. It means this is...
For what it was.
The best version of the thing that it wants to be, you know? And From Dusk Till Dawn is pretty much that.
Yeah.
It gives you lots of things to look at. It gives you some fun characters. Gore in the second half. Cool shit in the first half. All sandwiched, you know, by Selma Hayek, like, doing a strip dance. I don't know.
Yeah.
This is why we go to movies, people.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, like, it's such a good 90s, like, I'm at the mall movie.
You introduced that expression to me and I thought it for the first half of Goosebumps. I was like, this is a 90s mall movie.
Yeah. I mean, there's nothing better than 90s mall movies. Like if I were a filmmaker, the only thing
you need to
make
a list, please for the site, make a list of 90s mall movies.
Okay.
Not made in the 90s.
Ooh.
I know Hansel and Gretel is one because that was the first time I heard that from you.
Okay,
but yeah.
90s mall movies, not me.
Made in the 90s. All right.
Done.
I'm excited about this.
Done. I will write it. Smokin' Aces would probably be one.
Oh, yeah. Fuck. Yeah. That's a good call.
Yeah.
I'm so excited about this list.
Yeah. I probably just, our Rotten Tomatoes column is just going to turn into this instead. I changed it. We were originally going to write a column together about, Rotten Tomatoes movies that got bad tomato meters but we think are secretly good, so
yeah,
all of my choices are 90s mall movies pretty much.
I'm just having a problem like finding there's no way to
like
filter Rotten Tomatoes just show me movies that have 0 to 20, you know? Like there's no way to, why would they not make that an option?
I don't know, but I mean like would you really want that list? You're gonna get like a billion movies look through.
That's fine.
Yeah.
Because shouldn't you also be able to filter movies that have 80 to 100? Like
you would think so. Yeah.
I could understand nobody wanting 50, you know? Give me all the movies that got 40 to 60% on Rotten. It could go either way. But whatever.
I'd like to think that there's one guy who like lives in Minnesota who's just like, hey, I only watch movies from 41 to 50.
59.
To 59.
Slightly better than average to slightly below average.
Like, He's like, because I don't fucking deserve a
fresh Can you name a movie that lands in that spot?
From 41 to
something,
59?
Yeah, something that go between 41 and 59.
I think Spider-Man 3 might be in the 41 to 59 range.
Interesting. That might be a below 41 for me. I don't know.
I don't know. I'm an apologist for Spider-Man 3. Not to the Devin Faraci level, but...
Is he an apologist for Spider-Man
3? I think he's written columns about like how it's secretly a really...
Well,
good
I remember
movie.
The thing about Peter Parker dancing. Like, he wrote a whole thing, okay. I think, about Peter Parker dancing.
I think that there's a lot that's... Like, the Peter Parker dancing thing, like, when the bad Peter Parker thing, I always thought was funny. And I thought it was deliberately funny. I didn't think it was, like, embarrassing funny. Yeah. But there's a lot wrong with Spider-Man 3.
Oh, boy, is there.
For sure, yeah.
It's stuff that could have been corrected easily, too, which makes me crazy. Anyway, are we good for From Dusk Till Dawn?
Yeah.
All right, cool. Thank you for the suggestion, Alex.
Yes.
If you guys have other show suggestions, we try to get to as many as we can. We can't get to all of them, but you can always email those to fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter. We are at fthismovie. Like us on Facebook. Rate us in the iTunes store if you're a fan. That helps. You can listen to us on Stitcher and follow us on Instagram.
20-year anniversary of Bed of Roses is coming up.
Oh, shit. I wanted to bring that up because... Yeah. It beat this movie in like
box
its
office?
Second week. No, this was number one in its first week with $10 million, by the way. Like, can you wrap your head around $10 million being number one in January? But in its second week, it dropped and Bed of Roses was ahead of it, which means Bed of Roses was like in the top three at the box office for a week.
That's so cool.
I can't fathom that.
People
but you should
probably
definitely.
It was just like a date movie. Right, and then they like did not know what they were in store for.
In addition to. The 90s mall movie column, you should definitely write a 20-year retrospective review of
Bed of Roses.
Yes.
Okay.
Who else is celebrating the 20th anniversary of Bed of Roses besides Mary Stuart Masterson?
I don't even think she is.
Well, cause Christian Slater's not because
he's
scoring
all
Golden
Robot
Globes,
now.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, please don't forget, coming up on February 13th, F This Movie Fest 5, an incredible lineup of movies. Use the hashtag FThisMovieFest. For more information, go to FThisMovie.net and click on the FThisMovieFest 5 tab. Thanks for talking about this, Adam.
Yeah, absolutely. It's always fun, and I can't wait to talk to all of you guys on February 13th.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to F This Movie.